there's a lot of successful people in my life who are not in recovery of know-it-allism, because the success kind of, it doesn't blind you necessarily, but it put blinders on you to perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm doing my best to live up to two particular characters in the Bible that I don't think we talk about enough. The Roman centurion and Ananias. I said to my friends, if you see a bag of McDonald's in the back of the car, don't ask me what I
ate. Tell Wendy, and she'll get after you.
Yeah. Well, don't ask me what I ate. Ask me what's on my mind. Doctor says, oh, you have cancer, and you're going to have to do chemo, or you're going to die. And I said, yeah, I don't think I'm going to die. And I don't think I need chemo. And he goes, no, I've been doing this for a long time. You need chemo or you're going to die. And I was like, Doc, you don't know me and you don't know my God.
Stories stir the soul.
Stories reveal.
And stories heal.
In this podcast, we will give you an inside look at someone who's had a life-changing breakthrough.
Real people, real stories with real breakthroughs. As a health and wellness expert and coach, and Todd as a men's mentor,
we've seen firsthand what God can do when it comes to a breakthrough. So lean in, listen well. This could be your biggest breakthrough.
Hello, and welcome to Your Biggest Breakthrough. I'm your host, Wendy Pett.
I'm your co-host, Todd Isburner.
It's a delight to be here with you today.
Yes,
thanks for tuning in.
It is. Wendy, what does it take to go from pride and self-reliance to surrender and service?
I don't know, because
I don't really know either.
Have pride, and I'm not self-reliant, ever.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to have a separate podcast just about true confessions.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, today's guest, Philip Gournay, I know him as Phil. He's a great friend over the years, and he has lived that journey in just a way that very few people ever will. Mm. After walking through a divorce, a deep personal struggle, and even life-threatening illness that led to a heart transplant, everything changed.
Yeah, yeah. He's been through it. I mean, literally, he received a new heart. But the greater transformation, he's the first to say, wasn't physical, it was spiritual.
Yeah, and out of that season came a powerful framework for breakthrough. I mean, breakthrough after breakthrough after breakthrough. And one of the things that he talks about in his new book is about reconcile your past, navigate your present, and serve your future.
Yeah. So if you've ever wondered, you know, is God going to really be able to use some of these terrible things in my life, you know, my lowest moments, my pain, my pride, even my failures, so that he could build something maybe purposeful? Well, then this conversation is definitely for you.
Yes. So Phil, I'm going to say his full name, Philip Anthony Gournay. It sounds so regal or royal. Yeah.
He's a class act.
He is also known as the recovering know-it-all.
Wait a minute.
Do you like that?
Recovering know-it-all.
Yeah.
There's hope for me.
Can you relate?
There's hope for me.
He is an author and spiritual guide focused on transforming pain into purpose. And with three decades of experience, Phil explores life's toughest challenges. And those things are loss and relationship strain. He uses personal storytelling and biblical wisdom and practical frameworks to help individuals emerge stronger. And he's written several books, and a couple of his notable works are Prayers for the Living, The Four-Step Plan, and The First Three Steps. And that's one of the books that we're going to be talking about today. But each are offering unique insights into personal growth and great resilience.
Yeah. So he's also a former podcast host. He's got over 250 interviews, and he's engaged with all kinds of diverse voices, sharing stories of redemption and resilience. And then he co-founded a men's ministry, and I love this, at Heartway Church in Davie, Florida, where he leads discussions on faith and purpose. He's really mentoring men in their walk with Jesus. Mm-hmm. He's also fluent in three languages, so I feel like a real dunce in front of him.
Where's your dunce hat?
And inspired by his own miraculous recovery from illness, Phil's mission now is to inspire others through authentic writing and speaking, where he emphasizes love and connection and service in personal relationships.
Enjoy this episode. Well, welcome, Philip. I know you as Phil Gournay, to your biggest breakthrough. We are delighted to finally have you on. I've been trying to get you on for some time now.
Yeah, I'm healthy enough at this point. Thank you so much.
Praise the Lord for that.
100%. He gets all the credit.
Yeah, and for those who are YouTubing it, you get a nice close-up of that handsome face and that smile. The smile is perpetual. I don't know if you painted it on there or what, but we're going to get into how come he's got so much joy.
Yeah. So first, we want to talk, Phil. You know, I've known you for a while. We met through a mutual friend, and you've been known over the years as the recovering know-it-all. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should start there, because what's a recovering know-it-all?
Well, you know, I've coined the phrase when I turned 30, thereabouts. I had done some work with Landmark Education, and it's quite simple. If my life was so great, why did it look the way that it did? And about 5 years ago or so, my current pastor, Dr. Danny Prada at Heartway Church, he did a message on everyone is an addict. And he was basically iterating the 12 steps for life, right? Mm-hmm. And in the first 5 minutes, he was like, I'm looking around at the congregation and y'all are looking at me like I'm crazy because you don't drink or you don't smoke. But he said, we're all addicted to the way we think. And it was such confirmation for the decades that I had been using that moniker that, yeah, I recognized that the way I was thinking was dysfunctional, right? Because I didn't get the results I wanted. And so if I'm the smartest guy in the room, or the context I held information and intellect wasn't getting me the results it should have, I needed to change. So that's where that started.
That's so good.
Well, you're talking to so many people right now.
Because we think we know it all, got it all figured out.
Man.
Yeah.
Not you though, Todd, not you.
Of course not, no. Well, so that sort of first dawned on you, and then take it from there. When did you start to realize that something really had to change? And then how did you start to pursue the changes that you knew had to take place?
So without the help of mentors and the acceptance of feedback from trusted, loving sources, I couldn't get there. When I was introduced to the Landmark Forum, and anyone who's familiar with its origins with Werner Ehrenhardt and S and the various iterations, Mindspring, Momentum Education. The technology is simple. We mostly operate in the space called what we know we know and what we know we don't know. But the technology operates on what you don't know. And it's opening up new distinctions for your ways of being. And I mean, it's a mouthful. But unless you go through the experiential lessons, you don't even see the rackets that you're running. And the Dr. Eggerich talks about the crazy cycle in Love and Respect, that book. And it's like, if she respected me more, I would love her more. If he loved me more, I would respect him more. And no one wants to stop the crazy cycle, right? And so that's just one iteration of the way that you're thinking, but understanding why do I think that way is work that most people aren't even willing to do. And in fact, when I was introduced to the Landmark Forum, the person that introduced me, God bless her, but I didn't think she was all there, right? I'll just leave that there, okay? Because I don't know if she's ever going to see this, okay? But I thought she was inviting me to an Amway meeting, okay? And it was a special night about the Landmark Forum, which is how they do their a basic introduction to it, right? And I sat through the thing and I was like, oh, this is personal development. This would be great for my wife. But she won't do this if I don't do it.
Yeah.
So I signed us both up. And it was an eye-opening revelation that taught me that I made intellect mean that I was loved. And I talk a little bit about that in the book.
Your book is great, and I'm actually going to hold it up right here. And it's a new release, so it's been a great read, and it's the first three steps: reconcile your past, navigate your present, and serve your future. And I want to take us back a little bit to early days with Phil, because those may have been some of your lowest, darkest moments in a season where, and maybe you didn't realize it at the time, but you got the stinking thinking from way back when. So let's kind of go back to early times with Phil, and then also would love to hear not just your upbringing and that kind of thing, but also when you had a breakthrough with your faith.
So where do I begin?
It's two in one. Start with
yeah, so I would say that early days with me revolved around the competitive nature of having two brothers, an alpha male dad who was like, my dad could kick your dad's butt, dad, right? Black belt in karate, amateur boxer, an entrepreneur. He owned several businesses, and he helped the family get to the Americas from Haiti because they all worked for him at some point and then branched off on their own. And so when you have the kind of parents that are Grand Central Station, everyone stayed with us. My dad would put us in front of the rooms, do that thing that I showed you, quiz us. He would have me dance around like Charlie Chaplin. And so
entertain us.
Wow.
Right. Are you not entertained? Right. So you kind of grow up with the sense that pleasing people, or at least for me, I can articulate it from my personal experience. Entertaining, pleasing, being in front of the room, being gregarious. I can only say that it seemed to come natural, right? And so now as you get older and you're trying to belong to your peer group, the social acceptance factor, am I a cool kid or not? And I was and I went to a Catholic school, so my initiation into the faith was just my inherited faith of the family, right? And I didn't have a bad Catholic experience. And this is no dig to my Catholic brethren, but we're spoon-fed the faith, right? And so it was what it was, but I did have some really deep spiritual moments in my life that connected me to a source. And we call him God, and we call Jesus, and we had statues in the house and all that. And so I knew right from wrong, but I weighed heavy on I'm smarter than you. Because my dad weighed heavy on I'm faster than you, I'm stronger than you, and such. And I talk a little bit about that in the book. And so I think early on, life was good. I was smart. I was a straight A student all through school. And so that was the currency for me, right? And I think the various things that I got away with bred, I guess, more arrogance in me, in that my brother got in trouble for everything because he kept getting caught. Right.
And you were a little bit more clever, huh?
Yeah. I learned early on that I'm a solo act. My brother always had a crew. He always had followers. And I didn't really need that because I knew followers rat you out.
And you knew it all. You didn't need anybody else.
Right. And you don't know that you're a know-it-all. You don't know how you're occurring to others.
Sure.
Right.
And you know, it's interesting, too, because hearing you say that doesn't seem to line up with what you wrote in your book about not being enough. And yet it lines up perfectly, because don't we tend to kind of go the other direction when we're really insecure on the inside? So talk to us about that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, until there's that stopgap or that pattern interruption, you can't see it for yourself. And I in retrospect, I remember the first time my father said, oh, here it is. I know, Dad. Because I kept responding to whatever he said with, I know.
Yeah. Interesting.
But I don't see that at the time. I'm 30 years old the first time I'm recalling, oh, shoot, he's been telling me that since I'm like 14 years old. Right? So
yeah.
I guess the dysfunction, I liken it to, there's a lot of successful people in my life who are not in recovery of know-it-allism. Because the success kind of, it doesn't blind you necessarily, but it put blinders on you to perspective, mm-hmm. right? And then yeah. you can't fault them because of their success.
Hmm. Interesting, yeah.
I just know that the men who are listening right now, I mean, all of us can identify with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the reasons why we try so hard on the outside to prove, all right, I got what it takes. Because inside, we're really not that sure.
Right.
Until we really get connected with the Lord and we understand our new identity in Christ.
Identity right? crisis, yeah.
So you're man, you're talking to us.
Yeah, and look, I'm doing my best to live up to two particular characters in the Bible that I don't think we talk about enough. The Roman centurion mm. and Ananias.
Mm.
The reason I say that is he's a pagan, the Roman centurion. There's no yeah. such thing as Christianity. Right? The only mm-hmm. context we're given is that he's favored by the Jews because he helped them build their temple, right?
Yeah.
And the man says something that the Bible prefaces with, Jesus was amazed.
Mm.
And when you think about that, right, this is the all-knowing Son of the Father. How do you surprise God?
Yeah.
Right?
That's good, Bill.
And then he says, he looks at his disciples and says, in all of Israel, the chosen people, right? I have not seen faith like this. And I often ask people, faith in what?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And mm-hmm. people don't necessarily get it. And they go, wait, remind me of the scripture. I said, he gives it away when he says, I am a man of authority. I tell men to go, they go. I tell men to stay, they stay. If you only say the word, I know my servant will be healed. And so he had faith in Jesus's authority.
Hmm.
And so okay. I'm looking to be that guy, irrespective of doctrine, who trusts so much in God's authority over my life. And then I'll skip to Ananias. We have zero context for Ananias other than that the Lord spoke to him in a vision. And at the end of the day, he repeats what basically Jesus says in the garden, your will be done, right? He goes and does what God asked him to do to remove the scales from Saul's mm. eyes, and then you never hear about him again,
mm.
right? So for me,
He's obedient.
Yeah, that's the contrast. Like, it's not the doctrine. It's the relationship. And to your point, without the Spirit of God, do I even have an opportunity to see the revelation, hear the revelation, and then be about my Father's business?
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, so good, yeah. Bill. Wow. What an interesting perspective, but you're absolutely right. And I was thinking about how I was just hearing the other day about how so often we'll in Christianese or in the Christian circles, we'll call people an unbeliever. Well, they're an unbeliever.
Right.
And it's like, well, wait a minute. No, they believe, but just what are they believing in? Right?
Right.
And so the offense that actually puts on someone who does believe, but doesn't believe the way we believe. So anyway, mm-hmm. that's just a little side note. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about just the years that you grew up, and I mean, it wasn't easy in your home. I mean, you had a tough dad mm-hmm. that was, as you mentioned in your book, more like a con artist in the way he conducted his business. Mm-hmm. And so you learned from a master of that. Mm-hmm. You had a mom that just has compassion and forgiveness and just this mm-hmm. tender heart. And anyway, fast forward this. You now are more of you're an adult, you're married, you have children, and you're bringing in kind of what you learned as you grew up into these spaces of business and as a parent and as a spouse. And mm-hmm. let's talk about that and how it affected those areas of life and what happened.
Yeah, and how you broke through all of that.
Yeah, or how the Lord did.
Yeah, so it's funny you say tough.
I mean, as I read it.
Yeah,
it
no, of course. Tough. And I think it's purposeful in that, you know, there's a character arc in every story, right?
Yeah.
But in those moments, it's not tough. It's just my normal.
Right. Good point.
And so as I'm working on my fourth book now, it's understanding like contrast and how important contrast is for discovery. Right. Mm. Because until you visit someone else's home, like completely different outside of your family, sometimes you don't even have a contrast. Because if you're all in the same kind of village bubble and everybody does the same thing,
chaos seems normal.
That's your normal. Right. Mm-hmm. Arnold Schwarzenegger talks about that in his book, his memoir about, I got beat up, but so did my neighbors. So did my friends. Right. And so you don't know anything different. And the most benign way I can explain it is if you guys don't take off your shoes when you get home and you go visit someone that does and all the shoes are at the foyer or the mudroom and you're like, what is this? And then they explain to you why. And then you go home and tell your parents, hey, you know, we should take our, they're like, stop it. Right.
That's funny.
But now you have the distinction. Right. And so I think growing up, it was just my normal. Hmm. Right. When I met Millie, the mother of my children, she's now my former wife. But when I met her, it was like, oh, wow, I'm smitten. It's a nanosecond later that a buddy of mine, I stopped in my tracks watching this woman sitting at her desk, and a buddy of mine didn't see me stop, and he bumped into me. His name is Ricky. Ricky will remember this moment. And I looked at Ricky, and I was like, who's that? And he goes, oh, that's Millie. She just got back from maternity leave. And it was like,
Oh.
Right. Yeah. But a few weeks later, I find out she's not with the dad. She's a single mom. And so I'm mentioning this because I had to reckon with, oh, she's got a kid. I'm 21 years old. And what sold it in my mind, again, the know-it-allism, oh, I could be a better dad than my dad. Hmm. And then I told her, and after about a month of working together, we were coworkers. I told her, I hope we could be more than just friends. And it was more like 2 months, actually. And she wrote me this letter saying, I don't know about my circumstances being a single mom. And I took the letter, folded it, had a smile on my face. I was picking her up when she came back from a vacation. And she's like, why are you smiling? I said, because in everything that you said, you didn't say no.
So I still have a chance.
Yeah. Right. So I'm mentioning the story, not for the romanticism of it, but I didn't have premarital counseling. I didn't have anybody telling me, hey, this is what you need to look at. I just had my own brain and my thoughts about, oh, I could be a better dad than my dad. Mm-hmm. Or more importantly, I felt like I could be a better husband. He was actually a really good dad what he provided and what he taught me. Because if you don't know by now that you learn both from the great habits as well as what not to do from the bad habits, if you're willing to like examine it and say, oh, okay, we're not doing that, right?
Yeah.
But I had no idea how to be a husband. And I think that's the hallmark of looking at the divorce from the eyes of, man, if I knew half the stuff that the trauma that the mother of my children went through, I might not be married, but I might not have the children.
Right.
And so it re-solidifies Romans 8:28 that we know that all things work together for good. It doesn't say that all things are good. And I think anybody listening would be wise enough to understand that aspect. But in the midst of trauma, it's very difficult to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as you know, as you brought what you knew growing up into that marriage, and then it ultimately led to divorce, you had a moment where you had a serious dark night of the soul.
Right.
And I want to talk about that because some people listening might be in their dark night of the soul and need to hear the hope that you experienced and that you can bring forth.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to understand context, right? There were several iterations of failures of my own behavior, right? And one of the first things that my mind taught me or told me was, I can't trust Millie with the truth, right? Because I interpreted the first few times that she wanted out of the relationship after we were together as, oh, she just found out this and she makes it mean I'm out of here, right? And then I learned that that was basically her mother's intervention, right? And the mom's background, no judgment, but several different relationships and just on to the next one. I don't know all the details, so I'm reluctant to paint it in a negative way, but that background informed her way of being around the marriage. And my head was like, okay, well then I guess this is where I just don't tell her about the financial difficulties because otherwise she's out. Right. And so I developed the habit of just, I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it. Don't tell her because let me keep her happy. Right.
And yeah. That actually could speak to somebody right now, Phil, because, you know, marriage is a, it takes work, as you know, and it takes communication. And 100%. When you don't have it, then there's, there's some stumbling.
So foundationally, it's cracked.
Yeah.
Right. And let that go for, we were together 13 years in total, but in after 9/11, business collapse, we had moved to Florida just 2 months before that. My savings were getting depleted little by little. I have to start commuting from Florida to New York to keep my old clients. Four or five days a week, I'm out of town. I'm home on the weekends while she's raising the kids. And so a lot is collapsing, right? And then the debt is getting crazy. And
you felt the weight.
Yeah, a lot of weight. And then there was a financial, it's debatable as to how this went. And so this is my version of it, okay? I'm very clear on that. I needed the tax returns that year to pay off some debt. And I was accused of stealing her money. Okay. And so now she finally said the D word of, I want a divorce. And then a series of events, including being kicked out of my house and the paperwork is filed. And I basically said, look, you could have everything. Just don't tell me when I can see my kids. But I'm out of the house. I'm not waking up with them. I'm not there to make them breakfast. I'm not taking anyone to school. I'm taking my daughter to daycare. She's a year old. And it's May. The divorce is final. I get the paperwork. I've lost everything. I've lost my identity. I've lost all the things that I felt made me who I am. And I figured I'm better off not here. And there's a particular highway in South Florida in Broward County, I-75. Anyone that knows it in that area, it's a fast highway. It's a 70-mile-per-hour speed limit. It's trucks, and it's 2 a.m., and I decide I have to go south to go to where I was staying, but I'll go south on the northbound side, and I'll just beeline for a semi. It'll be clean. The driver will be safe, I hope. But it's 2 a.m. And as I'm approaching the highway, I'm seeing some modicum of cars, you know, just no traffic. But it's 2 a.m. and it's Florida, so everybody goes to bed. I go to the off-ramp, using it as an on-ramp. And it's one of these off-ramps that's somewhat circular, right? And it was like, as soon as I passed the do not enter sign, very great figurative there, it was like I went through a portal. And everything slowed down. And all I heard was, for I know the plans I have for you, plans for you to prosper, Jeremiah. And I know the number of hairs on your head, and Romans 8:28. I just kept hearing scriptures. And then I heard my sons, Kyle, Gabriel, and Jordan in kind of unison saying, but why, Dad? But why? But why, Dad? But why? And then it occurred to me that my daughter wouldn't know me. She was a year old, a year and a couple of months. And I stopped. And I just reversed out. And at this point, I'm not even 100 feet from the highway, right? That whole time, not one car passed by.
Praise God.
Yeah.
Not one. Okay. So I back out. I sit at the swale of the side of the road. I cried my eyes off. And I talk about that in the book, but it was the beginning of kind of a figuring out who are you and whose are you? Right. And I wish I could tell you that it was immediate, but if it were not for the men's ministry that showed up right after that, literally, if that was a Monday, on Wednesday, I was invited to a retreat that Friday.
And that's changed, the Emmaus group, right?
Yeah. Emmaus. Yeah. And it changed, it changed my whole outlook. Wow. Right. But it still took a long time for me to like figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, sure. You wish you could snap your fingers and everything was put in place overnight, but that was a low point. And yet during that low point,
God
because
met you there.
Of God's love and care and plans and purpose for you, he got your attention. And talk about a breakthrough. I mean, that was a God-given breakthrough.
100%.
Turned you around, started set you off in a new direction. You've also faced other challenges. We want to talk about your health challenge in just a moment. But before that, as you're progressing forward and you're learning lessons about sort of the new you and the new way of thinking, one of the things you mentioned is learning how to navigate your present and serve your future.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
So the first iteration of this book came from a conversation I had with my son, Jordan, who was in the throes of alcohol and drug addiction, right? At the time, I just thought it was weed and beer. There was a little bit more, but I don't know this. And it was the first time I strung the words together. And I said, son, the way I see it, we all have to reconcile our relationship with God, whatever that means to an individual. And we have to learn how to cope with life in real time.
So good.
And then lastly, manage the quality of our relationships. Again, it was the first time I strung those words together. I'm trying to reach my 21-year-old son, and I didn't know where it was going to go from there, but I knew those words weren't mine. I knew they came from a divine appointment, right? But I didn't know what it meant 100%. And so coping with life in real time, what I recognized was through the men's work I had been doing, drinking and alcohol is a coping mechanism. Shopping is a coping mechanism. Eating.
Social media.
Yeah. All these are all coping mechanisms, but it doesn't mean you're really coping if you're not dealing with the feelings and recognizing who's in the room in your mind, right? And so one of the things that happened for me to get me over the hump was I recognized, for example, I said to my friends, if you see a bag of McDonald's in the back of the car, don't ask me what I ate.
Tell Wendy, and she'll get after you.
Yeah. Well, don't ask me what I ate. Ask me what's on my mind.
Ooh, that's good.
Because I recognize I would eat junk because I wasn't feeling good about Phil.
Right.
And so how that transferred was I started identifying all of the ways of being and feelings I had that were low self-esteem or unworthiness, right? And where they were coming from. And so I recognize also, I can't just kick them out of the car, but I can threaten them to kick them out of the car. But the main thing I had to do is I couldn't let my emotions drive the car anymore, right? And so
good, Phil.
So I would see the McDonald's and be like, only thing I could get there is unsweetened tea. That's it. Right. And every once in a while, I'll get us a hot fudge sundae with extra fudge. But I'm not going to get the double cheeseburger and the fries and the supersized drink, because that would mean I'm not coping.
Mm. Right. That's so good, Phil.
Yeah. And so that's where navigate your present comes from. Right. Mm-hmm. Recognize the storm in your mind, whatever that emotion is, adjust your sails. But do not ever let it take the wheel, ever.
That's powerful. Yeah. So good, Phil. Thank you. And we know you have a hard stop on this podcast.
I got interview. About we'd love to, 6 minutes.
Yeah. 6 minutes.
We could keep going.
You have so much to share. Yeah. But I cannot end this interview without talking about the incredible breakthroughs that the Lord has done through your health and his miraculous healing on so many levels. And so I don't know how we can tie this up and put a little bow on it in 6 minutes, but let's go, Phil. Let's talk about what you have been through and overcome. And I mean, I know I have prayed for you over the years, and you have encouraged so many people by just the miraculous ways in which the Lord has healed you and has worked in and through you. So anyway, let's first talk about your first situation, your health situation, and how that played out.
Yeah, I guess the way to summarize it and give it the meat it deserves is to understand how God prepares you for everything. Mm-hmm. And everything that's occurring in this present moment is not about this present moment.
Yeah.
It's understanding process. And so I'm grateful for Landmark Education. I'm grateful for how I saw my dad and how I figured out what that meant and the racket I was running. I'm grateful for business failure. I'm grateful for the divorce. I'm grateful for everything, right? Mm-hmm. I could not be prepared for the diagnosis of cancer and acute renal failure had I not recognized the preparation for it, right? And so what I offer to people is, and this is part of the second book, there is nothing wrong. Nothing is wrong. There is only something to learn. And I thank God for the presence of mind to understand what I had learned up until the point when the doctor says, oh, you have cancer and you're going to have to do chemo or you're going to die. And I said, yeah, I don't think I'm going to die. And I don't think I need chemo. And he goes, no, I've been doing this for a long time. You need chemo or you're going to die. And I was like, doc, you don't know me and you don't know my God.
That's right. Good.
I think I want to boost my immune system before I put any poison in my body. So, and I'm telling you in the same way that I'm saying it here in this tone, I don't do high highs and low lows anymore. Right. And so I literally patted him on the shoulder and I said, I'll be in touch. And he was like, no, you can't.
Love it.
He's like,
I
have to book, you have to book an appointment at the front desk. I was like, you guys have my number. I left. Now, a couple of months later, I'm going through this holistic protocol. I went in on a Monday. I had gone from 210 pounds when I got diagnosed down to 170. I was juicing. I was trying all these different holistic naturopathic methods. Mm-hmm. On Monday, I get weighed. On Wednesday, I'm told your kidneys are failing. You have to do chemo. It's like, okay, we're doing chemo. I was like, okay, Lord, where do you want me to go? Who do you want me to meet? What do you want me to learn? What do you want me to teach? Because we teach what we most need to learn. Mm-hmm. And so I learned about the unforgiveness and contempt I still have for my dad and my ex-wife. And I did that work with the help of my friend, Pamela Gregory, whose ministry is healing through forgiveness.
Yeah.
And make a long story short on that one, I went from 170 down to 145 during the chemo. Mm-hmm. I told the kidney doctor, I don't think I'm going to need a transplant because you don't know me and you don't know my God. 2.5 months later, my kidneys came back and surprised all of them, right? Yeah. And I talk more about that in the book. You're going to have to get the book to get those details.
Yes, get the book.
Selfless plug. And then fast forward to December of 22, and a side effect of the chemo, at least for me, was heart failure. And had I not gone through what I had gone through when that diagnosis came, you know, it might have floored me, but my brother was with me. The doctors around me were from the same hospital that treated me for the cancer, which had now been absorbed by NYU, which is another piece of God's providence. And they said, I'm sorry, the chemo is causing heart failure. My heart was pumping at 15%.
Wow. Mm. Wow.
Yeah. And so fast forward, there's more details in the book, but when my cardiologist mentioned you might need a transplant, and he gave me all of these various scenarios as to if this happens or if that happens.
And share the stats on that too, by the way.
Yeah, so I'll get there. And and so he goes, so what do you think? And I said, about what? He said, about what I just said about the transplant. And I said, I'm not thinking about it because I want to cross the bridge when I get to it. You said, if. He goes, you're not worried? And I said, would it help? And he was I guess not, right? And so here are the stats. Less than 5% of the people who need a heart ever get one. Mm-hmm. Over 35,000 people need a heart annually, right? And mostly it's because of comorbidities. They have other issues that it doesn't make sense to put a healthy heart into that body, right?
Right.
You could get it from up to 3,000 miles away, 3,500, depending upon where you are. It's gender agnostic. It just has to be body mass and, you know, blood type and all those various scientific things that I don't know the words. And bottom line is, what I'm very clear when he said this is that there would be a family grieving for me to live. I knew the part about someone dying. I'm a donor on my driver's license.
Yeah,
right?
So am I.
But what I recognize, being a man of faith, that that's just the beginning of the next step, right, in our journey. You're complete here. So I'm not grieving this individual. I'm grieving with a family I don't even know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I ask my friends not to pray for me. I'm ready to meet my maker. But God's plan supersedes mine all day, every day. Right. And so the reality is there'll be a grieving family, and we need to undergird them, because here's how I got over my divorce and this. I was sitting in the movie Cold Mountain with Jude Law and Nicole Kidman and Donald Sutherland. It's a Civil War movie, and Jude Law is courting Nicole Kidman's character, and he goes over to meet the minister, her dad. And he says, if they come around, are you going to join the war? And he says, I suppose I will. And then Donald Sutherland, the minister, says, then I pray the South a victory. And Jude Law's character said something I will never forget, because it was my final date night with the woman I was trying to save my marriage with. Okay? Jude Law's character says, I think God is just about done with both sides of that prayer.
Wow. Mm.
And I looked at the woman sitting next to me. She's looking at the screen. I look back on the screen. I don't remember what happened next. And I'm like, Lord, I'm praying to save it. She's praying to get rid of it.
Mm.
I don't want to be the reason for her discontent. So that's when I surrendered the marriage. So now here I am. And my friends are going to be praying for me to live, and no one's praying for somebody to die.
Right.
And I don't want people who are praying for someone to live, because I don't know what tragedy will befall my donor, and have them lose their faith because their prayer is unanswered. And I'm very aware of that tension, and I can't bear it on my own. And so I asked everyone to please pray for a family, because the inevitable is the inevitable. We're all born to die. Yeah. But I can't stand somebody losing their faith because of me.
Yeah.
Well, I know that I have prayed for you often, and even Todd has too when I've shared about you. He didn't know you then, but joined me in that agreement. And so I think of how many people you have encouraged and influenced because of the way in which you see, you're just wise in the sense of how you are living your life, and it's for His glory, and you're humble about it, where maybe back then in the recovering know-it-all years, you wouldn't have been, but now you are. And I think of how you've had this heart transplant, and it was from a family of beautiful people that it was their son. He was 21 years old, correct? Construction worker.
Jacob
Rhodes. And you got to meet this family.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll just interrupt you real quick.
Yeah.
When I went to the first heart transplant support group meeting, I met about 20 different recipients. None had met their donor family. Several didn't want to, and they were trying to discourage me. Or in terms of manage my expectations that it never happens, right? 2 months later, I got the letter from Ginger, Jacob's mom, wishing blessings on the four or five families that survived because of her son's organs, right?
Wow.
And so I immediately wrote back, and, you know, God has such a unique and gracious way to answer our prayers, right?
Really?
It's elegant, and you got to trust the process. And I was just so determined. The same way I knew my kidneys would come back, the same way I knew that I would be healed. Mm-hmm. I believed I had to meet these people. The fact that they're also believers is the icing on the cake, but I wasn't married to that.
Yeah.
Right? I just knew God's got a much bigger plan, and this moment is not about Phil. This is about the people I get to help, because the scriptures are clear about the stuff that we go to through, what it builds in us and what it's for. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, why was the man born blind? To glorify God. Mm-hmm. Because if Moses would have gotten to Pharaoh and said, let my people go, and Pharaoh said, oh, okay, since you asked so nicely, Moses gets credit, right?
Good point.
The plagues are necessary.
Yeah.
Right? And plus, the scriptures tell us he hardened Pharaoh's heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of the narrative.
Yeah.
He is the author and the finisher. And so I'm just doing my best to live through the Marvel Cinematic Universe scripting. And anybody who's a Marvel head like me, you know that the actors don't get the scripts in advance. They get it almost near the day that they're shooting. And they get a little piece of it.
Huh.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
You got to put a lot of trust in the writers, that's for sure.
Yeah,
just like you put a lot of trust in the master writer of the story of your life. And
amen.
Phil, you're so inspiring. What we really love most is your God has given you a new physical heart, but it's so obvious that He's transformed the spiritual heart within you so that you could be prepared for everything that you've been through. And in hindsight, looking back to see with a perspective that God put all of this together, nothing is wrong when you trust in Him and believe His plan and His purpose is perfect. And that carries you through. You just offer a lot of hope for people who are so spun around inside their circumstances because they just don't get it.
Yeah.
And they're asking the wrong questions. And you have helped to answer some of those questions and really encourage us to just keep trusting the Lord.
100.
So, man, thank you. And it's so, we haven't been able to get into it, but if you read the book, you'll find out.
Definitely, right
you're
here.
You're very involved. I love the fact that you're mentoring men. You're in part of Emmaus, it just, you know, you're giving back. And I think that's what's given you such great joy. So bless you.
Yeah, 100%. Look out for Heartway Church in Davie, Florida. The name of the ministry there is The Way, The Truth, The Life Men's Ministry. We have another retreat coming up in, I think, the week before Easter. We're just locking down the venue. And so the first retreat is called The Way. And it's based on the I don't know if you're familiar with the fourth day movement. It's the day after Jesus rose. So Emmaus and other Crucio and other types of retreats that are based on the day after, what happens the day after Jesus rose again.
Cool. Right?
So that's what it's based on. But
thank
you
so much.
I will
put that in the show notes. Appreciate you so much. Again, the book is called The First Three Steps, Reconcile Your Past, Navigate Your Present, and Serve Your Future. And that is what you are doing. You're a great model. Yeah. And I appreciate your friendship. And bless God bless you, my friend.
Yeah. Bless the Lord. I thank you guys so much. God bless you.
God bless.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much. That was
so powerful.
Oh my gosh. Mm. Such a powerful episode. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Yeah. We're so grateful. You know, Phil, he shares his story in such an eloquent way, but he's so open. He's so transparent. And, you know, his journey reminds us that God doesn't waste anything.
Nothing at all. And so if you listen today and you are feeling like you're stuck in regret or pain, or maybe you've been a little self-reliant, let this be your reminder that breakthrough doesn't start with that perfection place. It really starts with that surrender.
Yeah. And so maybe your first step is really to just reconcile your past. Maybe it's about navigating, you know, where you are right now. I love that idea of navigating your present and really kind of prepares you for the future. Or maybe for you today, it means stepping into service instead of just staying stuck in, you know, survival.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, God is really and still is in the business of heart transformation.
Yeah. True.
Seriously.
And so maybe your breakthrough just starts right now, beginning with a new heart.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I feel like I should drop the mic on that and close this podcast, but I can't.
No, there's something to give away.
There's something to give away. So Phil said that if anyone purchases his book, The First Three Steps on Kindle, then they would receive a hard copy, a signed hard copy in the mail, but you would need to leave a review. So the first two people that do this and they leave a review and in the comments, they say that they heard this on Your Biggest Breakthrough, then he will send you a signed copy of his book.
You know, it's an easy read too. And it's his story with all sorts of lessons woven in. It's very profound.
And entertaining.
It's an interesting read. You're going to like it.
Yeah. All right. So thanks so much. And please share the show with others. God bless you. And we'll catch you next time. Take care.
Well, that's a wrap for today's show. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, we love spending time with you right here on Your Biggest Breakthrough podcast. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode. But until then, just head on over to yourbiggestbreakthrough.com where you'll find some free resources and information and a place where you can comment. And we would love to dialogue with you there. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.